Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome back. My name is Chris.
I'm Andy.
And I'm Steve.
And this is Streaming Things During Hours. The only podcast we're pretty sure that brings you the best, the brightest, the strangest, the sexiest films and TV shows available to stream right from your home in an ocean of streaming content available. Fucking shit.
Streaming networks.
It's fucking vying for your attention. Bastion.
We are your lighthouse.
Your beacons of broadcast.
Curators.
Of content.
Yes. If you've never listened to the show before.
It's a lot of this.
Fuck you, buddy. Why didn't you listen before?
Hoo-day.
Oh, guys, and ladies, and the non-binary folk. I watched a sport ball.
Wasn't it fun?
I did it. I'm a man.
I can see you just growing hair.
My ovaries have grown hair. Finally.
I watched the last minute, so I got like thicker eyebrows now.
For sure. Yeah. You are looking bushy, my friend.
Bushy.
So if you guys don't know, we are denizens of the Cincinnati area. And so the Bengals, I believe is how it's pronounced.
That's the cheerleaders.
Yeah. Oh, really? Yeah. So they were there, technically. I wasn't wrong. The Bengals are in the playoffs, whatever that means. And so
it's supposedly a big deal.
It is very important. And so I've been in this like weird position where, of course, if you know me, you know I do not care about sports. But it's unprecedented in our area. It was the first time we had entered the playoffs since 1991.
No, first time we'd won a playoff game since 91.
That's right.
We were in the playoffs in like 2015.
That's right. First time we won a playoff game since 1991.
Now we've won two in 2 weeks, guys.
Oh! And so this is important to a lot of people that are important to me. And so...
Like me.
By association.
Andy's literally sitting right here wearing a Bengals jersey.
He is. A Bengals jersey.
Chris is draped in an A24 hat and a Sex Bomb shirt. I'm wearing my work shirt. Andy is just rocking the orange and black.
He's striped. He looks like a fucking feral tiger sitting at our table.
A Bengal, if you will.
Mm.
He is the Tiger King.
So, like, it's important to me by association, you know? Like, my father-in-law put it, like, hey, man, you know, this is the first time this has happened in my lifetime. You know, he's in his early 40s, and he's, like, you know, really teary-eyed about this, right? Like, this is a monumental moment in my lifetime. It's exciting. And so I was like, you know what? That's great, because if it was like me going to Sundance or something, I would be teary eyed, you know, and he would probably in support of me be like, "That's fucking great, man. You just go do it. You know, that's awesome." And so with that in mind, I'm like, yeah, that's great, man. You go to drive to Tennessee. That's amazing. Go see the game. And so I was watching the game with Andy today because Andy said he was by himself. And I was like, oh, my friend, by himself.
Oh, friend.
I mean, it wasn't sad. I was cooking food.
I'm having a great time. You don't have to come over. But in my mind, I'm like, yeah, man, it's not cool. Here I come. But it was very intense. From the perspective of watching these gigantic gladiators just vying for placement in the penultimate competition that has usurped their adult lives.
That was solid words.
Wow. I mean, goodness gracious, was it riveting? Mm-hmm. And knowing what's at stake for our city.
For the city.
You know, when I was a kid,
Natty will rise.
There is some practicality to it. My dad explained it to me. He's like, you know, son, when the sports teams do well, it's really good for the economy of Cincinnati. People are in a good mood. They tend to go spend at the shops. They go out and eat at the restaurants, tourism. People come to the city to watch the games. And so it's a good thing, you know, economically speaking. And so, you know, I've always had like that practical spin on things. But any hoozle.
Wow. We've been paying for that stadium for how long? So it's about time that those payments actually turned into something. I mean, we haven't, Chris and Andy.
No, I've paid $0. But $0.
We're reaping the benefits of all the people in Ohio who pay for that.
Mitch stadium. McConnell hasn't let a dime slide by for Paul Brown.
Well, I don't see the point of supporting the Cincinnati Bengals.
I'm a turtle.
I'm going to go back into my shell.
You got a moist shell there, Mitch. So, that was really entertaining. I had a great time. That was a good game. Down to the wire.
Down to the wire.
The guy kicked the shit out of that ball at the end. Yeah, tons of sacks. There was more sacks than a gay porno in that fucking match. Mm-hmm. And I've got things to compare it to. I'll tell you that.
Euphoria.
That's true.
Andy, before we move on, you are the biggest Bengal fan of all of us. What does this mean to you?
A lot, man. So this game didn't mean as much to me as the last one did. The last one was the Cincinnati Super Bowl. Can we finally win a fucking playoff game? And we did, because they haven't won a playoff game since I was 2 years old. And obviously, I don't remember that.
No memories.
Wasn't a big fan back then. I was more of a Patriots guy.
Andy walked around the stadium that day, and he said, and I quote, "I have no memory of this place."
But yeah. So, I mean, you were here for the end of it. I was screaming. I was, I was fucking ready for it. And
I believe the phrase "let's fucking go" was yelled
a number of times.
And we fucking went.
And Chris was making fun of me because I was like pacing a beer in one hand, my vape in the other. Just like, we can fucking do this, guys. We can fucking do it. And we did it.
And we did it.
We did it.
We did it.
The three of us in this room.
Thank God we trained so hard.
When we win, it's we. When they lose, it's they.
Yeah.
Damn them.
I think we played a great game. We gave it 100%.
100%.
The team was really strong. The opposing team was great. But at the end of the day, we were the better team. And that's all I have to say about that.
Indeed. Indeed. So that's one of the things we've been streaming. We kind of jumped the gun on that. But
we did stream it. YouTube TV is how we streamed that, guys.
Is that how we did it? Because this is your house. I didn't know how 100%. We did it. Great.
Andy's house, Andy's rules.
That's right. House rules. It should be mentioned, today is not it, but hereabouts, last week, I believe, was the 1 year anniversary of the Streaming Things return.
Yay!
Yay!
Guys!
So we took the week off. just to celebrate, even though I'm sober.
I celebrated in my home by myself.
Steve had a COVID scare. He was quarantined. Andy was otherwise inclined. And so therefore we just decided to take the week and, you know, not try to rush some shitty episode or something like that in its stead. So we apologize for that. Shit happens, as Forrest Gump said. And so therefore here we are, but it's amazing. Yeah. It's been a whole year since we decided to start recording these again. You guys know the history, longtime listeners. You know, we started off a Stranger Things podcast, did very well between seasons, not so much. And then personal upheaval of multiple variants caused a lapse in the show for a year and a half, I would think.
Yeah.
Somewhere around there. Got a couple really heartfelt emails from listeners back then that made us want to restart the show. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. Actually, they have requested to remain anonymous because they were extremely personal emails and it meant a lot to me. So, here we are a year later, recording every single week, except for the day that it was our year anniversary.
And it's great because, like, this is actually the longest running the show has been. This has been like the third reboot/sequel of Streaming Things.
Yeah.
And it has now surpassed the longest running version of ourselves. Like, we've never gone this hard or this long, baby.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Is that why I want to quit?
I think so.
It's time.
Past that. Exactly. Once you reach that milestone, you kind of just run out of gas, you know? But it's, I mean, take this, boys and girls, to heart. This is a true underdog story, because it goes to show, when you put all your effort into something and you really give it your all. I mean, we've recorded every single week for a year, right? So except for the one, right? Whatever.
Well, we also record multiple times. For many weeks.
Patreon episodes as well, and some extra episodes. So, I mean, 60, 70, 80 episodes, right? So we put our all into it. We spent thousands of dollars and just thousands of hours of time into this show, all of our heart and soul. And we have less listeners than ever. So that just goes to show, you got to fucking just go for it.
Imagine Rocky, but he just keeps losing.
This whole time, Clubber Lang's behind me like, you will pay my championship for things.
It's like, she divorced you 2 weeks ago.
You will pay my champ streaming things. All jokes aside and honest dark humor, we truly love doing this. Thank you for listening. Two of us love doing this.
Poor Andy.
The other one we use his house.
I'm having a good time. A little buzz now. Good.
No, I get it, man. You get the bourbon cabinet popping.
Yeah, he's on that Bengals high, so
you know it.
So to celebrate the 1 year anniversary of Streaming Things, the reboot cool, I think is what Steve's been calling it.
That's what I call it, but legacy cool is way better.
Yeah. So the term legacy cool
has a better word.
No, it's Chris's word. I said reboot cool.
I don't take credit for it either. Legacy cool was coined by Matt Singer from Screen Crush, I believe, but it's become like the catch-all term. It's a really good name.
Well, fuck him. I'm giving it to Andy.
Yeah, Andy, take it. Take it. We're on, Andy, like the football.
Thanks, guys.
And so we're in honor of the release of Scream 5 and also our 1 year anniversary, we decided that today's episode is going to be about legacy sequels. So sequels long after the fact, that they aren't reboots. They aren't really sequels, which is why he coined the new term. It's a Lego sequel, right? So that's going to be later in the main event of the show. But first, let's get to a little business. I tricked Steve. He thought I was going to make him push the button. What a stupid ass. Ooh,
I got all percolated. I jumped up. I got my finger on the button, and you're giving me a 180.
You percolated him.
Ashton Kutcher, go back in the kitchen. It's not a full punk, but I did trick Steve. That's a early aughts throwback for everybody.
For back when you used to have to watch the TV Guide channel.
Yeah, man.
Punked pop up there in that little screen in the corner.
Oh, many things. Yeah, and then you got Ridiculousness. Remember that show?
Oh, hell yeah. Rob Dyrdek.
When, right? Jackass was a TV show. Anything. It was all on MTV. But first, we got a little business. I just want to remind everybody, if you want to subscribe to the show, we would love that. I mean, it's great. Have money and stuff. That's at patreon.com/streamingthings. It would entitle you to an entire plethora, a myriad, you might say, of extra content. And you just feel a part of something, an early movement, perhaps, like a grassroots revolution of Bernie Sanders proportions. You could be a part of that. And
be a part of our Patreon menagerie.
Yeah, the menagerie.
I'm sorry. Say again?
Be a part of our Patreon menagerie.
One more time, but in the voice.
The Patreon menagerie.
So we want to say thank you to all of our current patrons. Steve, take it away.
I would like to thank Phil. I know you asked for Steve, but Andy summoned me. He looked in the mirror and said my name 3 times. Bernie Sanders. And I had nothing else better to do, so I hopped on a bus. You know, they're protesting Amazon somewhere in the country, because that's what always happens. And I thought I'd come down here and talk about the Patreon members of Streaming Things, like Phil, who's a great American comedy leader. She's fantastic. I love her. Carrie, you know what Carrie doesn't do? Cross the picket line. Thank you, Carrie. Our foreign dignitary, Enza. Of course, we can't forget Enza. Thank you, Cake. I love you, Cake. I personally like plain vanilla cake, but I also like you. Katie, thank you so much for not buying Amazon products. We got to boycott them. The people need the power. Daniel, thank you so much for just everything. Just everything. You know what I'm talking about, Daniel. You know what I'm talking about. Jimmy, thank you, Jimmy. I just spilled water. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do that. That wasn't me. That was the big corporations. That was the billionaires. They did that.
Those are the one percenters in that.
Thank you, Sarah. Actually, Steve wants to cut in on this. Actually, thank you, Sarah. This is Steve, not Bernie Sanders. Sarah shared with me a hilarious story about loofahs in Florida, and thank you for that, personally. That sounds interesting. Let's not dive deeper. Thank you, E. Lopez. You're great. And thank you, Kyle. You are not quite the contributor as the other ones, but we still appreciate your support. Damn, Bernie, putting Kyle on blast. Thank you, Patreon members. But yeah, thank you guys for letting us keep the lights on. But also, you know, just even if you're not a Patreon subscriber, thank you for listening to us all these years, especially after this year of constant content from us.
Just to quote the Sportballers, 100%. 100%.
100%. I hate the 100%. I'm part of the 99%. I'm not
sure about that. You're right, that last percent just makes it evil.
Bernie, get out of here. Have you even streamed anything, Bernie?
In all honesty, you know, we do watch a lot of stuff. Sometimes it requires some movie tickets. Sometimes it requires an extra month subscription to fucking Showtime to finish a show. Who subscribes to Showtime? I do, baby, because I want to talk about Yellow Jackets, stuff like that, right? So that stuff costs money, and we really appreciate you helping us do what we love.
Are we still doing the Spotify contest?
I can talk about why we're not, honestly, if you want me to.
I do have one entry.
Exactly.
Do you want to just...
My vote was pretend it never happened.
Okay.
That was my vote. As opposed to being like, hey, guess what? Not enough of you did it, so fuck you.
Sure.
My vote was just like, just pretend we never said it.
Okay.
Unless you... What would you...
I forgot what I was, where I was before. I'm an unprofessional prick, and I don't know how to jump back in.
Sorry, I kind of ruined
this. No, that was perfectly doable thing. I just forgot. I think I just said the stream. Oh, I just said the that's why we need money shit. So I can just go onto the email now.
Yeah.
Also important to note that if you'd like to email the show, you can do so at streamingthingspod@gmail.com. That is streamingthingspod@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at streamthingpod. You and all the other 60 motherfuckers can just tweet amidst the lightning and love. You can also follow us individually. Andy's got a fucking phenomenal name. Check this out.
At Andy Most Days.
Isn't that clever? He's that Andy good. Most Days. In fact, he's Andy Every Day because that's his name, but that makes it clever and fun. I just think it's a joy, but it's nowhere near clever as Steve's Twitter handle, Steve.
I'm about to knock your socks off, Andy. You're sitting high on that creativity pedestal. I'm about to kick it out from under you.
Knock
My Twitter
him down.
Handle is at Steve May 13.
Oh my God. It's God. So clever because he is Steve May 13. I don't know.
It's I got so nothing. Clever because I was the 13th person to request the name Steve May. Because I got on the Twitter people. Too late.
That's not nothing. There's 6 billion people on this planet. And mine is at C. Michael Writes. We love interacting with you guys. Enza and a lot of those folks, Phil, tweet at me all the time. We talk about movies and stuff. Join the conversation. Request things for me to watch. It's a hoot and we love it. Thank you so much.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's it. Is there any other business? Business.
I'm about to give you the business.
Okay, Dan, that moves us to our, what do we call this? Ancillary event? Extra content? Lovely segment that we like to call Crossing Streams. Andy's over here drinking Scooter.
Scooter.
He's got a blood orange scooter.
The Muppet?
That is actually my favorite character from The Dukes of Hazzard.
Scooter?
Scooter.
I've never seen a single episode of that.
Really?
Or the movie, none of it.
Them Duke boys are in this bucket of syrup. How are they going to get out of it?
Just a good old boy, never meaning no harm. It takes place in Hazzard, Kentucky, man. How could you not? It's just that's in our blood.
Is that why Hall? They're the Hazzard?
Yeah, the Dukes of Hazzard. It's a city.
Also, they're in the Klan.
They're not. They just have a little rebel flag on the car.
I mean,
car.
I took Dukes of Hazzard like Dukes of Calamity. You know what I mean? Just like, you know, they're the Dukes.
The Dukes of Calamity.
The Dukes of the bad things that happen.
You just spawned a wonderful fantasy novel idea in my head. The Dukes of Calamity. Like Crossing it. Streams is the segment where each week we talk about the things we've been streaming since last we met. And I've been having a rough start to 2022, guys. I find myself unable to just brave any new content, as it were. I hate calling it content.
Preach.
I haven't wanted to just dive into any like lengthy, dramatic, anything. Right. So
one I've of us.
Watched a few shows, though. Maybe that's what it is. I can blame it on the amount of television I've been consuming, because that's a good 10 hours to finish a season there. That's five ish movies or two Zack Snyder Justice Leagues, however you want to look at it. But Andy, what have you been managing to stream since last we sat betwixt one another?
Wait, betwixt.
That's not it. Betwixt Steve.
But thrice.
Steve is betwixt us.
I am the love sandwich. I am the meat. You are the bread.
No, rest in peace, Meatloaf.
Oh, shit. Oh, man, Meatloaf.
R.I.P. Meatloaf.
Okay, so first off, I have not been streaming any Dukes of Hazzard, and I'm real sorry, guys. I know I said I was gonna.
This Andy's done it again.
I didn't do it.
He done not watched an
episode.
Sheriff
Roscoe P. Coltrane. Okay. I've never seen it either.
So speaking of the televisions that are taking over Chris's streaming time, mm-hmm. I dived into a little thing that Chris has been trying to get me to watch for a really long time. I watched the first episode of Euphoria.
Yes.
On HBO Max.
Preach, I've been enjoying girl. Those TikTok memes.
You guys, it's really good. He was right. It's honestly like one of the most accurate portrayals of drug addiction that I've seen in a hot minute. Having had a checkered past very similar to Chris, and having had the same checkered past for much of our respective checkered past, mm-hmm. intertwined.
Andy actually won a checker championship.
Indubitably.
in the past?
Yeah, it was.
Whoa.
Anyway, it was crazy how accurate it was when they're talking about like how to pass a drug test. And oh yeah, you can take like niacin, but it might fuck you up. Your skin's going to flush. And I'm like, I totally took niacin when I was on diversion and it didn't work. And it did make my skin flush and I did almost die. And she was totally right. Like that. It was crazy how accurate it was to see the girl going through like a coming of age period in her life. She's like what, a sophomore in high school
I think she's like 17.
Okay, so she's very young, still high school, not as even a senior.
Is
this
Zendaya?
This is Zendaya, whose character name I don't even remember.
Rue,
that's right. They do the little Hunger Games joke at the beginning. I'm like, nice.
that's good.
I like that. We do it for Rue, and there's a little kiss. But no, her portrayal of like a high school addict was fucking dead on. And it was every bit what we went through doing drugs. I don't know if that we were quite as hard off as she was in high school. That feels like more early college for us. It doesn't matter, but still like basically the same age and very, very, very accurate to our experience. And in that regard, and this is probably the best praise that I can give it, it was extremely uncomfortable to watch because it hit really, really close to home. And it made me uncomfortable. It's kind of like watching Requiem for a Dream, which is a phenomenal movie that I never, ever want to watch again, you know? And so I felt that a lot with Euphoria. Now I'm only an hour in one episode and ostensibly have what, like 20 hours to go, something like that.
13, 14. Yeah.
A lot. So I'm in for a doozy for sure. But I absolutely want to keep going just because like I, not just like the accuracy of it, but also the character establishment. Like there isn't really much plot. At least in the first episode, it's basically like, hey, yeah, I'm a drug addict and I'm going to go to this party later is the first episode. And that's pretty much it. But it does a really good job of establishing like the community, all of these different characters, the drug dealer with the heart of gold, the little kid in the cooler with the face tattoos. I don't know what's up with him, but he seems awesome.
Ash, yeah, he's cool.
I want to see more. But yeah, that show was pretty fucking rad. At least a little bit I watched. I'm ashamed that it took me this long to watch it. But what I did watch, I liked a lot.
Have you talked about this, Chris, since, because you're the biggest fan of the show, but have you talked about it since it's the second
recorded,
season?
We haven't recorded since Euphoria season two, I don't think.
Yeah.
I expect that'll come up in your crossing street.
Absolutely.
Other than that, I watched a made-for-TV movie called Truth or Dare, not to be mistaken for the release in theaters Truth or Dare that came out a year later. I watched the 2017 Truth or Dare with my girlfriend.
Is this like a horror film?
Yes. It's basically a group of kids rent out a cabin wherein other kids played Truth or Dare once and they all died. And then lo and behold, the house is haunted and they're forced into a game of Truth or Dare by a malevolent spirit. And
I hate when that happens.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, it happens to the best of us, though.
It does.
Yeah.
You can't really. It's bound to.
It's bound to.
Malevolent spirit, come on.
Come on, malevolent spirit.
I got to go to work.
For what it was, which was a made-for-TV horror movie, it was fine. It had some fun kills. Anything with fingernails is always going to freak me out. And there is a scene where somebody gets a fingernail pried. So
is this the movie where it's like you have to play truth or dare or you like die?
Yeah, kind of.
It's like 3 years old or
you
something?
Either do it or the dare does you is the rule within the world.
Oh. I'm in.
Right. Dare.
Yeah, and so in as far as like the promise of the premise, they deliver their truth or dare happens and these kids have to do horrific things to themselves or each other. But as far as like establishing a plot, having a through line, having a climax that's remotely satisfying, we don't get any of that.
So what's stopping them from just saying truth all the time?
They don't get to choose.
Oh, okay.
So there's a stack of cards. In the start of the movie, they all write down truth or dare things, like either a question or a dare.
Okay.
And they put a stack of cards and then people start drawing. And then one of them comes up and it says, did you sleep with this person? And it was like a character moment between the people, like, this person did sleep with this person. They're like, who the fuck wrote that? None of them had. And then the next one was, put your hand on the stove. And it was like, oh, what the fuck? And then the vegan girl draws one and says, go eat his burnt flesh. And it's like, what the fuck is going on? But I don't know how many times in a movie.
Of course the vegan gets that one.
Right. Well, yeah. I don't know how many times in a movie, like, you have to have a character state the most. Sorry, that was Penny. I don't know how many times you can have a character like state the most obvious mundane bullshit. Like, I can't do this anymore. I don't want to, you guys. That line, I can't do this anymore, is dropped like probably 20 times in the first 30 minutes. It is fucking dumb.
And then they just decide that they can do it.
and then they have to. Anyway, it doesn't matter. I'm going too long on it.
No, you never. That's what we do. We talk about movies, man. I appreciate it. I was thinking about when you were talking that, though. That's something I've, especially with horror films, and that's why I don't like write them. It's very difficult for me. I don't know if you've ever thought about this, and I have a hard time articulating the sensation that I get, but it happens in every movie, but specifically with horror, it's like, how do you accurately portray this character? Mm-hmm. Like, obviously, it's not entertaining if they're just a blubbery mess, completely frozen in fear and killed instantly, mm-hmm. which is what I would think, how I would react in like 90%
most
of these
people. Yeah.
I guess, right? But I'm like, being honest, like, definitely me, right? I'm like, I'm not doing as much as I want to say, well, don't go in there. The obvious thing to do is to get the axe downstairs. I'm like, okay, I'm done, right? Yeah, right. We all know I'm done. But also, you can't have them be too. What's the word? Too unaffected or cavalier, or so it's like this right mixture of accepting the circumstances. Okay, there's a malevolent spirit, like, you know, because in reality it's like there's a fucking what, you know, like, yeah. It's just, how do you get past that realistically and have the audience buy in? I think that's hard to strike that balance. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what that writer failed to do is
100%.
Oh, she's going to be really confused and upset. And we just have to keep hammering that. And it's like, you want to move beyond that and enjoy the plot now. So I think that's tough. And I'm glad you noticed that, because that's something I think about a lot.
When we were done, I watched that with Sarah. She had watched it previously with her brother. And she was like, yeah, there's like really cool kills and stuff. And I'm like, sweet. Yeah, let's go. And then afterwards, I'm like talking to her about it. And I did a thing that I do a lot with, cause she was like, I feel like you're a harsh critic, and she's right. Like when the movie was done, I kind of just looked at her. I was like, so I did a thing that we learned in a writing workshop class, which is that you always start with a positive. And I was like, there was one shot in this movie that blew my mind. And this, I've talked about this before in the podcast. I look for these tiny moments of brilliance in horror movies, cause generally horror movies are not great, but most horror movies have some bit of like absolute shine through the diamond in the rough moment. And this had one of those where it was like one of the characters was just obsessed with filming things at all times. He had a little Ronin that he was carrying around a whole bunch.
Oh, he had a Ronin?
He did have a little
Which
Ronin.
Which one? Are we talking RS2? We talking
I think it was like a Ronin S, like the little handheld one.
Yeah.
Okay.
I used to work one of those.
Yeah, pretty cool stuff.
I love running Ronins.
But there was a little moment where he's stuck in a dorm and he had, a character has just passed, and he's playing with his camera, and then the camera starts controlling itself, which Ronins can do. You can remotely control them. It starts looking around, and then he picks it up, and he's looking through it, but then he sees the dead character, the character that's just passed, on his dorm room bed, and it was a really cool edit where he's looking through the viewfinder, which is his phone, and then over it to the bed where there's nobody, and then back where there's the girl. Now she's moving closer, almost like The Ring.
Oh, okay.
And then they do this cool, like, slow frame rate. She's all jerky motion stuff. That was awesome. But yeah, so I did the writer's workshop thing where I'm like, that was super cool. But the rest of the movie, eh. But honestly, it was worth watching just for that moment, because I live for those in these types of movies where I'm like, there's got to be something. And it was there. And like, just that thing, like, even now thinking about it, like, I'm kind of getting chills. I'm like, yeah, that was really good.
So you mentioned Ronins, and they can be controlled mm-hmm. separately. You can control it from your phone. So totally. it uses the gyroscopic sensors in your phone. And so if I tilt my phone up, the camera will look up, right? And if I, you know, look left and right, the camera will also look left and right. I've had this idea for a short film, and I hope none of our listeners steal this, because that would not be cool. But I've always had this this short film idea where it's someone operating a Ronin, but the Ronin like looks back and like, hey buddy, why don't you have a good, and you like puppet the camera so the camera's like actually a character. It's like, hey buddy, that's
oh, you can do it like Number Five or whatever.
Johnny Five
from the 80s.
Yeah, and I've always wanted to sit down and write that script and just have a man and his Ronin.
You know? You're doing a real good job.
And it's like Finch, the new Tom Hanks movie.
Yeah, and if you guys don't know, when I keep saying Ronin, that's just a camera stabilization gimbal.
Yes.
That explained it to our non-film savvy folks.
A camera stabilization gimbal.
Yeah.
It's a little thing that you hold, a handheld camera. Think of it as a selfie stick.
There you go. That
keeps things stable.
There you go. Mm-hmm. That's right. Put it on my level. Well, if you like, and I know you didn't like it, but if you like low budget horror films based on party games, there's one called Would You Rather.
I've seen that as well.
You've seen it?
Yeah, it's got Brittany Snow in it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And Sasha Grey.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Porn star fame.
Yeah, I was about to say the porn star?
Yeah, she actually does a really good job. Actually, side note, I know this is going to go dangerously close to territory that could make me uncomfortable. However, I really look up to Sasha Grey. I think she's awesome. She's got like a huge Twitch game streaming business now. And she seems to have gotten out of that business with aplomb and a ton of money, and was just really smart about it. I know I think she went to Harvard or something like that. I know she wrote a book. She's like a really brilliant woman, and I just want to throw that out there.
She also had sex on camera. Good for her.
Right. Like, whatever, right? But
we could all be so lucky.
But I wish she would do, I think she's in something big coming up too, because I know she wants to start like a mainstream acting career, but I just saw her face in this movie and had seen it because of research purposes elsewhere, and was like, what the fuck? but the movie's interesting, and there are some really interesting kills. And it was pretty same vibe there. Like,
yeah,
movie overall, not great, but some neat stuff.
Very, very similar with half the budget or less.
Oh, okay. So worse than Would You Rather?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I'll probably skip it.
But like I said, that one scene was worth it for me, and that's pretty much it. Going to a much, much, much better horror movie that I just watched, that's available on Amazon Prime. I just watched...
You looked at me like I knew the answer to this.
Is
it available on Amazon Prime?
And I'm rubbing my hands together while I'm talking, Steve. I'm really sorry. I don't know why I started doing that.
I don't even know what movie you're about to say, man.
I just watched Sinister. Directed by Scott Derrickson.
That is a great movie.
Written by Scott Derrickson and C. Robert Cargill, from 2012. Has it really been 10 years?
Has it been that long?
It's got to have been.
Oh, wow. I'm going to look that up.
It's got to have been, because then he did Doctor Strange.
They have a new one coming out here in a couple months, The Black Phone. And I'm really excited about that. I'm
so excited for that. Ethan Hawke.
This is Ethan Hawke again.
Yeah.
Because it was him and Sinister.
It is 2012.
Yeah, there you go. Wow. 10 years later, they're bringing him back and they're doing it again. Scott Derrickson, C. Robert Cargill. And dude, Sinister is a fucking phenomenal movie.
It's a good movie.
It's really, really good. It does occasionally rely on jump scares a little too much, but like, as far as like, establish a premise, be creepy, and fucking pull it off, like pay off on your premise, they fucking crush it. Like, this is a solid fucking horror movie, and it's creepy, and it's got some great kills, but it doesn't like veer into being like just a gore fest. It's not like mm-hmm. watching Hostel or anything. There's some kills, and even most of them are like voyeur kills. I don't want to say too much because I don't ever want to spoil those kind of things.
But, right.
Just, yeah.
I need to watch it again. I probably haven't seen it since 2012.
I hadn't either. Sarah and I had started to watch it like a month ago, and we both made it about 10 minutes in and fell asleep on the couch. But the other night, she fell asleep within 10 minutes again, but I sat, I sat and watched the whole fucking thing, and I was like, oh my God, I forgot how fucking good this movie is.
Yeah.
Yeah, everything about it is...
Big fan of C. Robert Cargill. He's got a podcast called Script Notes where he... helps people learn how to write screenplays, and he's really active on Twitter in like an engaging way to peons like me, and responsive, and that means a lot to me, and he's really cool. So I'm really excited for Black Phone, and I'm really sad that I know everybody loves Sam Raimi. I'm not the biggest fan, honestly, but I, you know, Scott Derrickson was originally going to do Multiverse of Madness,
and they wrote it together.
Cargill wrote the first Doctor Strange, and I was really excited about that. So whatever, it's not happening.
I mean, I'm happy that
Raimi's... Creative differences, you know, stand up for your art.
Yeah, I'm happy Raimi's like back in the MCU verse, but I really would have loved to have seen their version of Doctor Strange. Yeah.
Well, the first version was their version. It's the same guys.
Well, like the multiverse.
Yeah.
Because he was really...
He wanted to make it that horror film.
That they had. Yeah. They got the origin story out of the way. Yeah.
I wanted to see that. Because they were really selling the horror aspect of it. And
they totally backed off on that now that everybody's so horny for cameos and stuff. So,
yeah. Last thing I watched the entire 15th season of Always Sunny in Philadelphia. And it is fantastic. It takes place almost entirely in Ireland, which is really cool. I think that the change of location helped a lot with the potential stagnation of the series.
Yeah.
When you're 15 seasons in on a sitcom, like, what more can you do? And apparently a lot. It was super fucking funny. Like, really, really,
I need to
really
continue
good.
That. I'm still, like, barely into season two, and you keep begging me to watch that show. But
that's a show, like, I'll watch the first season, really enjoy it, and for whatever reason, I start watching other stuff and forget to go back to
it. It's one of those that, like, for no reason do I stop. I'm having a great time. Mm-hmm. Right. I'm just, like, nah, one day.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
It doesn't even start getting brilliant until, like, season three or four. So, like, season one is fine.
Maybe that's why. Fine, I just need to...
It starts getting absolutely fucking brilliant and has not stopped since then. It is so funny. And yeah, the dudes straight up don't miss. I mean, like, you've watched Mythic Quest and you love it, right?
Mythic Quest is phenomenal.
And same people making it.
That started off strong, though.
Yeah.
The only thing I can probably compare it to in advance.
Well, that was a dude in his prime at that point when he made it.
It's Parks and Rec. Like, season one is like, And then by season three, it's like the best show of all time. Like, it's just, I'm crying at every episode. I love these characters. It's so funny.
I legitimately think that Always Sunny is my favorite show of all time.
Wow.
Okay. Wow. It is that good.
Drawing a line in the sand. By the
way, I don't know. This might be rude if you have brought it up, but I'm curious because I think it's out. Because you went on this like month long, I'm rewatching Dexter thing. And I haven't heard you talk about Dexter New Blood. I
haven't gotten to it yet.
That is fucking ridiculous.
I had just
you were so hyped and you watched the whole thing.
Oh, I haven't finished. No, I haven't finished my Dexter rewatch yet.
Oh, okay.
So that is season 9. I'm on season 7 right now.
I thought you just petered out as soon as the new shit came.
No. I've been trying to. My goal was to finish.
You're on the lesser seasons, though.
Right. Yeah. Like, it's not great.
Yeah. Anymore. Now it's hard. Well, like, don't torture yourself. You know. No,
I mean, I got to get through it in order to watch the new shit. And I'm only watching this because Sarah wants to. Like, I'm well past when Dexter was good, and now I'm like in the golden years of Dexter. But
the Twilight years.
But I got to get through that in order to know what has happened in order to watch the new season with Sarah. And the goal was to finish all of it before the new season came out, before the new season finished. I missed that.
I've got bad news.
Only just. Yeah, it's not great, apparently.
I've heard from Dexter fans. Really? Dexter New Blood,
I thought
not
it was
great.
Getting good reviews.
It got middling reviews, but I heard that the finale...
I think they shit the bed again.
They learned nothing?
I heard that it's better than it was, and I don't know what it was.
I mean, low bar.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah, we don't know the bar.
I'm going to find out the bar real soon.
Steve, what the heck? have you been streaming? What the heck? I should just let it hang. What the heck, Steve?
What the heck? What low bar have you been crossing?
By the way, when you the reason I made a face at you and laughed was when you said run and Ronin.
Because you saw my face?
Yeah, right. Like, look at that face. When you said run and Ronin, I was thinking of that the song, run in, run on, run in. You know, I don't know. That was dumb. But I just want to explain because otherwise it looked like I was just like exasperated with your face.
I'm just used to that reaction though.
Okay. So it didn't offend you. Good, good, good. What have you been streaming?
So I know we talked about this last time, but I kind of want to bring it up again because I really
Star Trek?
No. I'm not. I will not bring it up ever again. I solemnly swear. I will quote make it so.
Damn it.
But I do. This is a show I brought up last time. I do want to talk about it again because some shit has happened and I want to talk about it. Right. I got to get this shit off my chest, Andy. Mm-hmm. And that is a show called The Book of a Mr. Bob A. Feet, The Book of Boba Fett on Disney Plus. So before, this was a couple weeks ago, last time we met, Chris and I were talking about how the show wasn't that great. It was like a worse version of The Mandalorian. It was too similar to Mandalorian, but not quite nailing it. And I do want to say the following two episodes that have released since we last recorded, I think are steps in the right direction. I'm mm-hmm. definitely much more interested in the show now than I was then. I think Chris is on the same boat with me on this.
I agree.
You kept up with it?
I did.
Why would you agree, Chris? I can't help
but watch a Star Wars. I don't know why. I don't like most Star Wars.
I know.
But I watch all of them.
Weird.
The live action ones.
Yes.
Yeah.
So maybe I do like them. It's kind of funny because I've got a really close friend of mine. I do. I love the world. I got a really close friend of mine that said that the show was awesome. And he's a huge Star Wars fan, but he's the toxic kind that's like hates The Last Jedi. But that's fine. But then won't watch any other Rian Johnson movies because he thinks it's his fault.
I left that out on my cross stream. I rewatched Knives Out. So great.
My dude, for watching that.
I just wanted to know that skins.
So he texts me. I told him I think the show's trash because that's how we talk to each other. We like overcompensate. We actually secretly hate each other. And it's a whole thing. And he's like, no, you're wrong. It's amazing. And then he texts me after episode 4 and said, that was garbage. I think you're right. And then I was like, oh, interesting. And then because I really liked 3. And then I watched 4 and I was like, I think that was light years better than 1 and 2. So we're just never on the same wavelength, man. Like you're trying to throw an olive branch my way, but I agree with you. A lot of people are really knocking the teenage biker gang.
Yeah. The quote unquote Power Rangers, as people have started calling them.
The Lost Boys.
I don't know why. I love it. I think it's a neat cyberpunk direction to go in the Star Wars universe. Mm-hmm. And the execution's not perfect. Like the futuristic motorcycles that they ride look like the hover rounds. Remember those old commercials where the old lady would be at the Grand Canyon and be like, I can go anywhere. I don't know if you remember that from when we were like,
I don't remember that, but. Andy, you do?
I do.
That's what it reminds me of. But one of the young ladies in that gang is actually the main character in Yellow Jackets, which I was watching simultaneously.
Okay. She's the one with the robot arm?
Yes.
The robot arm?
She's like the mullet blonde.
She's the punk kid.
Yes. Yeah. It's the same with that haircut and everything. So I really adore her. So I was like, this is awesome, you know, kind of crossover thing because I'm like watching Yellow Jackets at the same time. Anyway, I like a lot of the stuff that they're doing now. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And I want to touch on the Power Rangers people because they're getting so much hate. Like a lot of people are like pointing to them like this is the most un-Star Wars thing I've ever seen. And I think it is too
in a good way.
To a point, I see what they're saying, but they're also
running out there saying green power, red power, black power.
No, they're
it's so weird. They form a Megazord.
Yes, it's crazy.
It's really interesting having you guys bounce back and forth. I have no frame of reference right now. You're like the Power Range people with the little zoomy bikes.
All right. Think of someone that walked off the set of Cyberpunk 2077,
okay,
and then got onto a bright green, red, yellow
blob of polygons.
No, they've all got quote unquote modded. So like one guy has like a cybernetic eye. One of them has they look like steampunk characters. They don't look like Star Wars steampunk. They just look like steampunk.
Straight steampunk. Okay.
And they all drive these little speeder bikes that look more like Vespas, but they're, even though the show takes place in Tatooine, which is this dirty, grimy desert planet, their Vespas are like spotless. These are like a true motorcycle gang of kids who like upkeep their bikes. And so they're like pristine and polished, but and one that's got like pure green. This one's got pure red. This one's pure yellow. That's why people keep calling them like the Power Rangers, right? Because they're strolling up. And on its face, I have no problem with this. Because if you know George Lucas, you know the motherfucker made American Graffiti, and that is American Graffiti. Like, yeah. Their bikes look like an American Graffiti, but if they were hover bikes, right?
Yeah.
But, like, there is, I think, a discussion to have about why they don't necessarily work in the world. And I think that falls only on Robert Rodriguez, who is the director of Episode 3.
Yeah.
Because Episode 3, I think, is really, really good. But there is a chase scene where the Speeder Bike Gang kids are chasing this other character who's like on like a just like a land speeder, and they're chasing him through the city. It's one of the most poorly directed action scenes I've ever seen, because it looks like it's happening at 15 miles an hour.
Yes, it does.
And
it does.
And to
just picturing it happen.
Like, imagine someone on a Vespa slowly chasing someone on like a flat car. And that's basically the scene. And the thing that make it worse is, like, you know, they were editing this in the editing bay and like, man, this looks like it's taking place at 15 miles per hour. How are we going to fix this? And the editor's like, well, you know, we've got After Effects on this computer. Why don't we just add motion blur to their bikes to make it look like they're going faster? But they're not going fast. So it's just these blurry characters moving at 15 miles an hour.
So yes, Cyberpunk 2077.
Yeah, exactly. But I think that's the only bad thing.
Dukes of Hazzard earlier, they keep like fishtailing around these corners into like random stacks of boxes and fruit and stuff, like you would see in old 70s car chases, like to make it dramatic, like somebody walking through the street like, hey, you know, like
my shopping cart.
It's the same thing. And it's really Robert Rodriguez. I love him. I'm a huge fan of Desperado. Alongside Kevin Smith and Tarantino was Robert Rodriguez in that indie film Revolution. Hats off to him. He is unforgivably corny and always has been.
Yes.
Like the From Dusk Till Dawn, all that stuff where like the gun comes out of the codpiece, that kind of stuff is always him. And so when I see his name on this, I'm like, interesting choice, you know?
Yeah. And he's like the Boba Fett guy, because the episode of Mandalorian where Boba Fett returned.
Yeah, episode one was Robert Rodriguez. Was
Robert Rodriguez, yeah. So he, I guess, for whatever reason, he's the Boba Fett dude in the Star Wars universe now. That being said, I think Episode 3 and Episode 4 is taking the show in the right direction, because of all the negatives you can say about the Book of Boba Fett, the thing that I think it's nailing in terms of Star Wars, and I think what current Star Wars needs, is that it's opening up the world exponentially. Because even though this is a show that only takes place on Mos Espa and Tatooine, is they're adding characters and they're adding layers to like the world that is... It's kind of like, you remember when A New Hope came out and everyone's like, oh, there's that alien at the bar. That alien has a name and a backstory. This show is just that constantly. It's like, oh, here's this really cool looking Wookiee bounty hunter named Black Cursitan. And he's really, really cool.
That's a cool name.
And it's a dope name. And he's fucking badass. And he rips off Trandoshan arms. And they actually like talk about how Trandoshans hunt Wookiees and stuff. And there's that rivalry between the two species. There's two huts that are called the twins, and there's this like kind of gross Lannister thing happening with them where they're kind of like curled up with each other on this bed that's being carried by what looks like 40
litter.
It's called a litter. Nice. With like 40 like slaves carrying them on a litter, and they're just these gross ass huts that are wrapped up amongst each other, like, and the one guy's using a fucking mouse as a handkerchief. And it's like little stuff like that. I think they're
nailing. The Rancor are actually really sweet.
Yeah, and the greatest Star Wars cameo of all time is the new Rancor handler is Danny Trejo.
Because it's Robert Rodriguez in charge of the show.
Yeah, and Danny Trejo, and just watching Danny Trejo walk up to a Star Wars set and be like, you know, Rancors are really emotional creatures. I fucking inject that in my veins. That's so great. Yeah, I love it.
I'm having a good time too.
But the point I really wanted to drive home is a lot of Star Wars fans, as we mentioned in the past, are toxic. And a lot of that conversation kind of aimed towards Kathleen Kennedy, the main producer of Lucasfilm.
Which has nothing to do with sexism.
No, nothing at all.
Yeah.
So, because like when anything bad happens in Star Wars, they're like, fuck Kathleen Kennedy. She ruined Star Wars. She's the reason Star Wars sucks now, because Kathleen Kennedy, not understanding that she's a producer. She's not making the art.
And all these people also hated George Lucas's next three Star Wars movies.
Yeah, but then,
actually four, really.
But nowadays people like forget that. They're like, the prequels are good.
Right.
But when anything good happens in Star Wars, so like Mandalorian comes out, or the Clone Wars, or some other good Star Wars, Rogue One, no one ever says, man, way to go, Kathleen Kennedy. She right. was also the producer of all those movies.
Right.
And you can...
Acceptable. You did your job. It's yeah. like the Bengals. You
yeah.
know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right.
She lost, but we won.
Kathleen Kennedy is a producer who is taking part of the high-end level things of like administration. She's hiring people. She's getting crews together. She's not creating storylines. She's not approving storylines.
She scheduled the filming on Tatooine because it's hard to get a set there built, right?
Right. Yeah. And this
very far away.
Yeah, they filmed Dune on Tatooine, actually.
I believe it's a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
Unless I'm much mistaken.
No.
But like, right. but like, I'm happy to see finally that people who have a problem with this Star Wars show, because this show is pretty divisive. People are finally saying, man, Jon Favreau really sucked out on this show. Like, I'm so happy someone finally gave criticism towards people who actually had a hand, even though I don't agree with them necessarily.
At least the person you're attacking had something to do with this show.
Didn't right, Jon exactly. Favreau create The Mandalorian?
He did.
So wait, they say he sucks now?
Because of Book of Boba Fett.
He also did the Book of Boba Fett.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a writer.
It's hard to say Book of Boba Fett and not sound like an idiot.
Book of Boba Fett.
Really, for Queen.
Book of Boba
the
Fett.
Book of Boba Fett. Book of Boba Fett.
So I know that I've gone really long on Book of Boba Fett, but I had to get that off my chest.
You crushed it, dude.
Book of Boba Fett.
Now let's talk about what I really want to talk about. I know it's coming. Go ahead, buddy. You do it. I'll jump in.
Actually,
you've been watching something else?
Is this the one that I can't see?
This is the thing.
It's the thing that Andy cannot see.
Yeah, I want Andy to watch this show, but there's really no point because he can't see it anyway. It's Peacemaker on HBO.
Why can't Starring John Cena, who you cannot see. We've been giving Andy that joke for like the last 2 hours. Like,
I can't take credit for that joke. It's all over the internet for years now, but it brings me great joy. Like my wife was like, we were watching Peacemaker and she's like, you know, John Cena is actually like a really good guy. And I was like, I don't know that. I assume so. What do you mean? And she's like, well, he does a lot of like hospital visits to people that are dying of cancer. It's like,
yeah, he holds the record for Make-A-Wish.
Yeah. Most Make-A-Wish visits.
Yeah.
She told this story about this young girl who had leukemia and John Cena came to visit her and she was all like teary eyed telling me this story. And I was letting it hang for a couple seconds. And I was real quiet. And I was like, that's really sad though. And she's like, what do you mean? And I was like, I mean, she can't see John Cena, so that's terrible. And like, she just like was staring at me for a long time. And I was being quiet, just watching the TV, waiting for the reaction I wanted. And she's like, I fucking hate you. But, you know, that's a thing I love about the internet. I was watching him on Jimmy Fallon tell the story of when he came up with the thing. You can't see me for WWE. And all the comments were just like, why is Jimmy Fallon talking to an empty chair? And like, it's just this thing we've all agreed to perpetuate. And it's funny. But Andy, Peacemaker is not only good, it is one of the best things that I have seen in years. It brings me tremendous joy. John Cena was born for this character.
Yeah.
And James Gunn's writing is flawless. His comedic timing is flawless. He knows exactly how to use everyone.
The cast is amazing.
He makes the fact that Peacemaker survived Suicide Squad sort of believable, but also calls attention to the fact that it's not in a way that's really funny. Like, it's just, I can't say enough good things about this show. I've been having an absolute fucking blast.
So it takes
place
after the Suicide Squad.
Yeah, it does. And
really?
He's in the hospital and he's like, the doctor's like, it's actually really miraculous. The building fell on you. You got shot and you just have a broken collarbone. It's pretty phenomenal. And like, it's obviously a joke about why would he be alive still? And James Gunn's like, fuck it. This is how we're going to do this. And and it works. The tone of the show is perfect. It knows what it is.
This show is equal parts ridiculous, silly, gory, but also heartfelt. Like all the things, you know, several months ago when we did the review of the Suicide Squad, all of those things we loved about it is in this show as well, if not more.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
In fact, I'm going to go, and this isn't a hot take, but I'm going to go on this hill with so many other people to die on and say that this is the greatest opening credits of any television show of all time. Wow. Like the opening credit scene that plays in every episode is so fucking good. I love it so much because it's purposefully awful.
Okay. And James Gunn is going on record to say that it will change and develop in meaning over time as you see more of the plot unfold of the show. So if you've been paying attention to it as episodes progress, because there's little things that you'll notice that kind of make sense now. And I can't wait to see more. Dude, it's, I can't say enough without spoiling. I'm trying to think of ways to like get you excited for this, but it's John Cena and this is a hard R show.
Very hard R.
Yeah. I mean, there's everything that you can imagine in a rated R is all over the show.
They say the F word more than Kevin Smith films.
And like, he's got this friend, this sidekick named Vigilante, who's like another quote unquote superhero. And they really call attention to the fact that, like, are you a hero or are you a villain? And do you even know?
That's what I was most concerned about, is like, by the end of that movie, I kind of hated him. And
they redeem him perfectly while not letting him off the hook. I mean, yeah, it's brilliant, but he's got this buddy and they are psychotic and he's not making any bones about that either. Like this guy named Vigilante, who's obsessed with Peacemaker, and he's just like this Kick-Ass-esque dork who is really lethal, but is also a super nerd. And I can't, it's so fucking funny. Like, he's just like, you know, Peacemaker, how we are, man. We're all about justice. You know, like we catch a murderer or a rapist or a shoplifter. we got to kill him. That's what we do, man. You know, and it's just like, it's, dude, it's so funny. Like, they're clearly psychotic murderers. It's got the actress from, I forget her name, unfortunately, but she's from Orange is the New Black.
Oh yeah. She's really, really good in that. I love what, and again, I don't want to spoil why she has an important relationship to the story. Mm-hmm. And I really love what they're doing with that relationship. If you've seen the Suicide Squad.
Okay.
It's very, very interesting what they're doing with that character specifically. I'm looking up her name now because she's great and she deserves the credit. Daniel Brooks.
Okay.
She played, you're referring to Leota, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And yeah, Andy, they're only like, there's four episodes now. They drop three at once. And then the fourth, it's every Thursday, but I think they're only like 30 to 40 minutes long. So You could breeze through them. They're so, fun.
They're like 48 minutes on average.
You think so?
I mean, yeah, they
feel so short because they're so fun.
Yeah, second favorite movie of the year.
Oh yeah. I'm saying every bit, everything, like he said, everything you love about the Suicide Squad is present in the show. And
there's
I honestly had very low expectations for Peacemaker.
Same.
Turned it on and was like, holy shit, that was awesome. I mean, the action's well directed, it's entertaining, but it's so funny. It's so funny.
And they reference the movie.
Right, I fucked a monster. Gate. What am I, like a vampire? Am I like a dick vampire now? Dude, it's so funny.
Like, there's this really great through line where he's kind of haunted by the fact that he killed Rick Flag. Mm-hmm. And that's like something they replay often, is him killing Rick Flag and Rick Flag going, Peacemaker, what a joke. And he's like, you know, I had to kill Peacemaker, I suck. Yeah. And he has this great, almost Kevin Smith-esque diatribe with his dad's next door neighbor. So he goes and visits his dad often, and the dad's next door neighbor is just this old fart who's always like trimming his edges, who's always trying to just start shit with Peacemaker, like, are you a villain or a superhero? And he goes on this like, you're not a superhero like Batman, and Peacemaker like stops and turns.
Batman has a coterie of supervillains. You don't have a coterie of supervillains. You must be a supervillain.
You know why I don't have a coterie of supervillains? Because I put those motherfuckers 6 feet under the ground. Oh, is Batman a hero? Oh, he lets Joker get out every 6 months from Arkham so he can kill more people. It's just like a great...
Which is a good point.
Yeah, like from that character's perspective, who like his whole thing is he kills criminals, you could totally see why he has this whole huge like unloaded diatribe about Batman. And they've also, the great thing about the show is they've secretly made really insane DC villains canon. Like, they made Batmite a canon character. Well,
James Gunn is a huge DC head, and like, he's pulling from real characters that are just deep in the mythos of DC lore. Like
Batmite.
Yeah. Like Matter Eater Lad. You know, and like, these are real comics that he just is one of the only six people to read. And so he takes great joy in bringing them up. But we've probably waxed poetically enough. I'm blown away by how much I love Peacemaker.
When we're done recording, I'm going to bring up the opening credits for Peacemaker, just so you can see the beauty of the, like, listener, if you don't have any interest in the show at all, just go on YouTube and look up the opening credits for Peacemaker. If it doesn't sell you on how hilarious the show is, I don't know what else will.
I co-sign that. What else you've been streaming, Steve?
That's it for me.
I'll try to go quickly. I know we've
oh my God, were we still on Steve?
Yeah. Yeah, I'll go really quickly.
I got lost. I'm sorry.
Well, I jumped in because that's one of my list too. But I finished Yellow Jackets. I know. I think I talked about it last time the show.
Yeah.
That show is nailed the landing. I'm really, really excited. I don't want to have any spoilers, but there's a casting call, if you will, on the internet there's a newer character that we found out is alive. Because I explained last time, it cuts between past and present, and you find out some of the girls from the island are still alive. And so it added one, as I predicted it would by the end, but it didn't show who the older actress in the present was going to be. And I'm like, who should play her that's from like the late 90s, early 2000s that would have the same oomph as, you know, Christina Ricci and Juliette Lewis? And the internet suggested Shannon Sossaman from most famously A Knight's Tale. Holy shit, that's perfect. Once you know who the character is, you'll agree. But so I'm really excited for that. I hope that happens. But that station, Yellow Jackets absolutely killed it. I also started watching a show called Station 11 on HBO. It's a post-apocalyptic pandemic show, which is rough because I know that one with John Cusack on Amazon did not do well because it was right in the middle of COVID about a pandemic. This one is beautifully done. I only watched the pilot, but it's really fucking good and solid. They do the same thing where they cut from Andy, you'll love it. I mean, just the cinematography is really stunning because they do this neat thing where they cut back and forth between past and present, but not really. Like, it just shows you know that there's an apocalypse, but it stays mostly in the past, at least for the pilot. And it's got an actress that you love. She's in, not that I don't love her, I'm just not a huge fan. She's in the Kristen Stewart movie, the Christmas one.
Oh, her partner?
Yes. What's her name?
Oh, I can't
remember. What's the name of the movie even? Yeah, I'm fucking blanking.
Happiest Season.
Happiest Season. Andy, okay. You knew her when you found out she was in it. You were like, I love her. Okay. Anyway, she plays the adult version of
Mackenzie Davis.
Yes.
I love Mackenzie Davis.
Yes, see, there you go. But so it does this thing where, like, it'll be the guy walking along a subway station that's packed full of people. And then he'll, like, pass through a pillar so the camera gets blocked, and the next 6 feet is like moss, cracked walls, overgrown apocalypse wall of the same space.
What do they call it, Steve? Just masking, like a mask edit.
Yeah, that's
and then it cuts back to people everywhere, just like a brief glimpse of the future, or like it'll enter a theater hall and it'll all be, all the chairs are destroyed, the ceiling's fallen in, there's trees growing up through the floor, and it'll like pass over a curtain and then come back and it'll be full of people and bright red curtains and stuff. And it's just really neat and stunning. A really interesting tone. I highly recommend Station 11. Everyone else has already recommended. I mean, Twitter is aflame with how like masterpiece this show is.
What was that show called?
It's called Station 11. It's on HBO. And I believe the finale just dropped and it was supposed to be a 100% stuck the landing kind of thing as well.
Sweet.
Andy talked about Euphoria. He started it. I've also been barreling through season two. I've been waiting for years for this. And it delivered on I don't have the time, but Jesus Christ, did it check every box I could have imagined. Boxes I didn't know were there were checked. The first episode of season two is balls to the wall, batshit crazy. Like, season one is all, wow, I can't believe they're going this far into the sex and drugs of this age group. And I can't believe the camera work is this stunning and the soundtrack slaps this hard. And wow, it's really melodramatic, but in a still simultaneously believable way.
I forgot to bring that up. The camera work in that is fantastic.
So especially good.
When that trans character is first going to meet the person in the motel, like the way that they did this tracking shot, like, the loneliness of the shot was fucking brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, it's an A24 production on HBO. So it's just like the marriage of those creative juices is stunning and written all over the final product. But the first episode of season two adds like this Scorsese element to it that I did not see coming. And all of a sudden there's like,
everyone just hates superhero movies all the time.
Yes. There's just like this really cool Goodfellas voiceover and brutal realistic violence and like crazy drug dealing, and like that all ramps up, and it's just like, okay, because that's also my other favorite stuff. Hell yeah. So I cannot recommend Euphoria season two highly enough. I'm going to keep you posted on that. Andy alluded to it. It's been striking me even harder this season. Watching the show, as much as I love it, is extremely damaging to my mental health. So that's a weird place to be in, because it's like, wow, that's the best hour of television I've ever experienced. I also am really sad and kind of want to die now. I don't know what's going on. I'm just like overly contemplating life. And my wife and I talked for 4 hours on the couch after the last week's episode about really depressing things, and which was healthy, but also like that's where it puts me. So it's interesting. Yeah. Zendaya released on Instagram this little message like, hey, not quite a trigger warning, but it was just like, hey, be really careful watching the show. We love it. We put our heart into it. But if this is painful for you, please don't watch it, you know, kind of thing. And I kind of scoffed at that. But I'm like, now I get it. Like, thank you for saying that. That might be a thing for you. Just be aware when you go to watch Euphoria. It is dark. And then also, finally, we were all supposed to go watch Scream 5, but Andy had a lot of really important stuff going on. Steve thought he had COVID. And so I went to see it by myself. And that movie fucking rocks. I'm really excited to report, and which is why we're talking about Lego sequels today on the show. Just quick notes. Scream 5 is awesome. It's really fun. They decided to kind of do it in a way that Matrix Resurrections did it, which is to kind of poke fun at its own existence. And I know you guys were not the biggest fans of Matrix Resurrections, but I don't think for the reasons that it is similar to Scream 5, if that makes sense.
Yeah, 100%.
They choose to take shots at toxic fandoms in a really creative, fun way in Scream 5. They actually actively bring up Star Wars in the characters' dialogue in the movie, which I think is hilarious. Like, there's a scene where they're reenacting a scene from Scream 1, essentially, and one of the characters is like, you know, like those guys that hate the guy that did Knives Out and they're fucking crazy, and then so we want to please them, and so by making this kind of story, what we're going to need is some of the original characters. But you know, it's really funny, really smart and witty, and I really enjoyed this the shots that it took directly at people that hated Last Jedi. Apparently Rian Johnson was actually supposed to play himself in Scream 5. That's how hard they were gonna go.
Wow, that's awesome.
But yeah, so that's really fun. I think you guys will love it. It is for not just lovers of Scream, it is for lovers of film, kind of. And so for that, I think you guys will get all the jokes and really enjoy yourselves. And also, you know, some neat Scream kills.
I have to see the other Screams first.
I don't think you do, honestly.
You've never seen a single Scream?
You've seen Scream 1, surely.
Surely I have not.
Wow.
Do you not presume that I have screamed?
Well, so here's the fascinating thing then that I'm sure you know. Scream 1 was a reinvention of the horror genre. It had characters who were self-aware of the tropes of horror and called attention to them. Like, there was characters who were big fans of horror movies. And that was the whole thing that was refreshing about it. It's like, never go in a room by yourself once the killer is revealed. Never do this.
Never say I'll be right back.
Never say I'll be right back. That means you're going to die, you know, because we're in a horror movie now and I'm the horror movie expert. And so for horror movie fans, that was really refreshing because it was like you get used to all the same beats and like, oh my God, it's not scary. This is what's going to happen. So it reinvented all of that by calling attention to itself. So what Scream 5 does is call attention to the fact that it's the fifth sequel of that movie and reinvent it all again by calling attention to it. And that is super clever. I got a really big kick out of it.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of people put it as like their second favorite Scream, like first or second favorite one.
Oh, yeah. Like and Scream 1 is phenomenal, but Scream 5 nailed it. There's the famous scene in the beginning of Scream 1 with Drew Barrymore answering the phone.
Yeah, I've
like
seen
you've
that.
Seen that, right? Yeah. So he's like, do you like scary movies? And so they redo that, but now they like make fun of themselves. And they know that there's people are like snobby about horror now. So he's like, do you like scary movies? And she's like, not really. Like elevated horror, like Hereditary and It Follows. Yeah. And like, I was just dying laughing like, yes. What a funny joke.
Do they actually call out those movies?
Yes.
That's fucking
It is
great.
Hilarious.
That's phenomenal.
Anyway, so it's another thing. I love things that know what they are, right? I like when things are self-aware. But we're running out of time. Let's go to our main event briefly. And talk about some Lego sequels.
There it goes. That's how our old theme went.
Yeah.
Oh God, tell me it's not the kid. 11. Friends don't lie.
That's the noir version. Okay, so there's been a plethora of Lego sequels released over the past 5-10 years. It's Hollywood's latest craze, and I think the fact that they're all meta now, like they're all creatively making fun of Lego sequels while in fact being Lego sequels, means that we've reached the last monetizable phase of them and that they're almost dead.
The snake is eating the tail.
Yes, that is my theory.
An Ouroboros.
Can we stop for a second and just do a collective three-way high five for our Lego sequel? Because we made it a year, guys.
Yeah, three-way. 1, 2, 3. Oh, it was. I just wanted to do
1, 2, 3. Yes. Nice. Yeah, that's why you get to listen to the Stranger Things theme song.
Mm-hmm. We wanted to call attention to the fact that we are in itself the snake eating itself. It's so many fucking layers. This is actually genius you're witnessing through your ear holes right now.
Wait, so by that logic, does that mean we're in our
last
time gasping
this
breath?
This snake is a phoenix.
We are the phoenix snake.
It's a fake. Oh, well. With a PH. That's a callback.
Bam.
I think to another episode, though, unfortunately.
That might have been a Patreon episode.
Subscribe to Patreon.
Yeah.
Subscribe to Patreon to understand the callback.
Ooh, if you're not on Patreon, you're missing those PH jokes. PH versus F word jokes. Drop it in hot right and left on the Patreon, baby.
That's the best ad we've ever done for the Patreon. So I don't know. Was it?
What? I think it was when you were thanking Phil at the start of this episode. Whatever.
So you did get the joke. And we knew that.
We knew it. We just wanted people to be aware of our Patreon that you can subscribe to on patreon.com/streamingthings.
That was a sneaky plug. We knew the whole time. You're right, Andy. That's deadly this episode.
I'll edit it out.
Did anyone have... No, I like it.
No,
did anyone have any identifiable format for this? Did you want to pick your favorite good Lego sequels? Or did we want to point out some especially bad ones?
I thought both.
Okay.
Oh, okay. I just went for ones that I liked. I thought we were doing our favorite ones.
Okay, Steve. Throw me an example. I'll do it this way. I'll just moderate. Steve, toss me an example of how to do it right. A really solidly well-made Lego sequel.
Blade Runner.
2049.
Yeah. Okay. I think that is that's quintessential
the
Lego
best
sequel, right? Yeah.
I have three on my list that are not only phenomenal Lego sequels, they are some of the best films ever made.
Ooh. Is Blade Runner 2049 one of them?
It is. Ooh. Absolutely. I adore that movie. I think it's better than the original Blade Runner.
I think that's fair.
Andy.
Well, should we kind of break down what we think of a Lego sequel's agenda should be? Like, what should a Lego sequel set out to achieve? What makes a good Lego sequel as opposed to a bad one?
I think it needs to honor the vision of whatever property it's trying to re-explore while simultaneously taking it not necessarily in a different direction, but to new heights, to new emotional heights. I think a good Lego sequel perhaps improves upon its legendary IP at the same time. Something adds something to it in a way that you didn't think was possible, but also can stand on its own, has something of its own to say, rather than just echo beats that were hit for a mindless cash grab.
The Force Awakens.
Exactly. The Force Awakens, which is a film I do highly enjoy, but is yeah.
It's a beat for beat retread.
It does not make me view Empire in any kind of new way or something like that, right?
But I totally understand why they made it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Because there was a lot of...
honor and elevate. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah. Yeah. In Force Awakens situation, I think there was a lot of they had to They had to like affirm to the fans that like we're bringing Star Wars back to its roots. Cause at the time we only had the prequels and people were still like prequels suck. Mm-hmm. So they had to like kind of prove to people, no, this is more what you
reestablish that, hey, we make Star Wars movies.
Yeah. We make Star Wars movies. This is what it is. And then we're going to grow from there. And they did, but then people had a fucking tantrum about where they took it later on.
All I know and all I care about that movie is I got Rey wearing her little, Rebel helmet.
You love that scene.
Eating her little piece of bread. I love that scene so much. So much. It's the most humanizing moment in Star Wars history.
Good one.
It is a damn good moment. And through your eyes, Andy, I love it all the more.
Oh, thanks, man.
What is an example that you have, Andy, of just a really fucking well-made Lego sequel?
Okay, so I have an interesting one that I want to throw your way because it wasn't a Lego sequel until a month or two ago.
Here, let me get my catcher's mitt. I'm ready. Throw it my way.
Spider-Man Homecoming.
Wait.
Caught it.
Homecoming? Not No Way Home?
Correct.
Okay.
It wasn't, but it is now.
It wasn't, but because of No Way Home.
Now because of No Way Home. Yes. And obviously, we're not going to go into spoilers for No Way Home. So think of it as the prequel to the Lego sequel. And I just wanted to blow your minds with that because that's totally what it was.
Right.
But I
don't even think it knew that at the time.
Maybe.
Right.
How do we know?
We don't, but I have a slinking suspicion that was not their plan.
I think that you're probably right. But like in as far as the canon, the head canon works, it now is, isn't it?
That was my nickname in high school.
Yeah, actually, that's fair. There's I got a couple on my list that I think qualify under that kind of world, that view where like initially when it was made, maybe not a Lego sequel, but because of subsequent films, it becomes one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
And so with that regard, the three Spider-Man movies that we've gotten are the best three Spider-Man movies. And so
he's drawing a line in the sand.
Right.
Best ones, even Far From Home.
All three of them.
Even Spider-Man Goes to Europe.
And Something Home.
Mm-hmm. I agree with him. But I do love The Amazing Spider-Man. I'll throw that hot take out there.
What is your example? This opening salvo of what a great Lego sequel is, Chris.
I think that there's only one. Like at the Highlander.
There can only be one.
When I think of a Lego sequel that just shits on the possibility of any other Lego sequel achieving this height. When I think of a Lego sequel that is not only good, that not only honors its predecessor, but elevates it to light years beyond what could ever have been conceived. It is one of the greatest films of all time. A movie that filmmakers look at and marvel at how it could exist. Even they don't know how it was made.
And also one that they're currently making a Lego sequel prequel for. But go ahead.
I'm talking about Mad Max Fury Road.
I knew it.
This is going to be on your list.
Baby. I mean, that movie is just a fucking masterclass in action filmmaking and showing it without telling. And I absolutely marvel at its existence. It is high octane cinema, baby.
Out of curiosity, do you think that it elevates the original Mad Max? Because I feel like it basically pretends it doesn't exist. Like there's little flashbacks to, hey, you had a fucked up past. Anyway, let's go ahead with this story.
That's
how the second Mad Max treats the original Mad Max too. As well, yeah. Because the original Mad Max isn't quite a wasteland. He's still like a police officer.
Yeah.
And his family still gets murdered. A
big society.
And then in the second one, like they don't even talk about that at all. It's still
Mel
Gibson.
Thunderdome, all that stuff. It's just a cool universe. I think that what Fury Road does really well is like Steve kind of talked about with, ironically, the Book of Boba Fett.
Book of Boba Fett.
Really doing a great job of expanding this universe and exploring, like, which is where Furiosa comes in. And it's like, fuck Max. There's all kinds of cool stuff going on. And this is brilliant, interesting stuff. And we've been stuck on this for too long. And that's what's really neat. But I mean, obviously the practical effects and what they were able to achieve with Fury Road is what's so amazing to watch. But that's still the movie I turn on if I really want to show off my Sonos surround sound or my TV or something, and keep somebody guaranteed entertained. It's Fury Road.
Yeah, the original Mad Max movies are always kind of hailed as these classic 70s, 80s action films, right?
Yeah.
But I'll be honest with you. I struggle to remember a lot of the original ones. I just get like vague idea because I've seen them, but like I can't really remember that much about them. But like I can remember almost every frame of Mad Max Fury Road. It's such a just an otherworldly standard in filmmaking.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's if you haven't seen Mad Max Fury Road, what are you doing? And you have
to put yourself in the headspace. And that's why I think this deserves to be at the top of this list. Because in my mind, Blade Runner, while it didn't do well in the box office, is now heralded as you know, a masterpiece, a very interesting philosophy, and one of the earliest movies of its kind. And so the idea that Denis Villeneuve was going to take that mantle and add something wasn't crazy to me. Mm. It never was. It was like, oh, that's going to be really interesting, right? Whereas with Mad Max Fury Road, it was like, what are you doing? You're making a fourth Mad Max film? Not really sure we need this, right? And that's where the Lego sequel that's really good always kind of makes me excited, is where you go into it kind of like, okay. And then you're like, holy shit, that worked. That was a great idea. So that's where I think that's the top of. I have one more that really shocked me in how good it was. Andy.
Terminator Steve, Dark Fate.
I actually really like Terminator Dark Fate. I don't know if you're being funny or not, but
it was being funny.
No, Terminator Dark Fate is good.
Is that the most recent one?
It is.
Okay. It's not Genesis, right?
No. There's Rise of the Machines, Genesis, and then Dark Fate. And Dark Fate is not T1 or T2. Let's not kid ourselves. It's not the Fury Road of the Terminator world. But it was like, that wasn't bad, you know, kind of thing.
To me, that's a failure. Like, at that point, just reboot it. And at what point also...
Is that a Lego sequel, though?
Yeah, Arnold Schwarzenegger is in it as...
So it's not just a sequel to Terminator. It is like a reboot.
Well, sort of, in the sense that it was a long time where they tried to like reinvigorate the franchise. So some of these, the definition's a little tough. Like, sure. Incredibles 2 is listed as a Lego sequel online, mm-hmm. just because of the sheer time that has passed since the first one.
I struggle putting Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol on my list because I was like, is that a reboot sequel or is that just a really good sequel that made this franchise go in a different direction? In my mind, that's just
a good sequel.
Yeah, I ultimately didn't put it on my list, but it was one of those things that I thought about. I put a lot of contemplation about.
Stylistically, it was a massive change.
Right.
But I think that it was ultimately still just a sequel. Mm-hmm.
We can't talk about phenomenally good Lego sequels without mentioning Indiana Jones, Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
I want a scene where he's riding with monkeys.
I jest.
The monkey scene with Shia LaBeouf.
I do have Lucas. One more really good one, though, and that is Dr. Sleep.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I think that movie is phenomenally well made, and I had no reason to expect that it would be as good as it is. I didn't know much about Mike Flanagan at the time. I should have known better. I fucking love Dr. Sleep. I got the director's cut 4K at my house. Anybody wants to come over, I think we should watch it.
This is an open call, listener. If you want to come watch Dr. Sleep with Chris at his house,
I did finally watch it,
and it was fantastic. Yeah, good. It was really, really good.
Really excited to get your thoughts
on that. And it's so different than The Shining.
Oh, absolutely. So
different. Oh, yeah.
And that's what I mean. It kind of adds... Yeah. I never read the book, so I never really understood that the shine was this magical propensity that this character had prior to.
Yeah.
So it's like a double whammy. Like, he has this psychic ability and he's in this haunted house, right?
Yeah.
Watching The Shining as a kid, and I never understood that, right? I was just like, it's scary. And so they really explore that.
In a way, that movie is a sequel to the book. You know what I mean?
100%.
And Dr. Sleep is a sequel that Stephen King wrote, but I'm just saying, like, they did not film it in a way. Like, they used, like, cuts and stuff, I think, from
The Shining. Overlook stuff.
And as far as, like, the actual, like, story, it felt more like a sequel to the original story that Stephen King wrote,
sure.
as opposed to the adaptation that he hated.
I think even the elements that Mike put in that were, Mike's a friend of mine. I think that the elements that Mike Flanagan put in were just kind of visual references for pure movie fans, mm-hmm. to keep them in that universe, rather than, like you said, it's more purely a sequel to the novel. But I think those are the big three for me. There's some other like decent movies. I wasn't being funny. I think Terminator Dark Fate is decent. I also think that Creed could be considered a Lego sequel to the Rocky films. 100%. And I think it's a really good movie.
I've actually never seen it.
Creed's good. I never watched Creed 2. I heard it was also really good. There's a Creed 3 coming out. So they obviously successfully rebooted it. And this might be a hot take. I don't know how you guys feel. I'm actually more curious to hear what Steve thinks.
Ooh.
Being this sci-fi guy that he is. I consider Alien Covenant and Prometheus to be Lego sequels.
Okay.
I'd agree.
I think it's fair.
I think at least Prometheus.
Is that the second one?
Is really good.
Which one's?
I actually really enjoy them both. I think that's the second one.
Okay.
I actually kind of really enjoy them both. And
hot take.
I'd like to get your.
I don't like the either first of them. One. I definitely don't like the first
one. Well, I like them in different ways. Like one of them's like Danny McBride's here.
The one with Danny McBride is the better of the two.
Yes.
But hands
the down. Other one is a little too philosophical at times, but
it also has the dumbest has characters of all time in it.
Like, of all time.
Maybe not of all time. But like, for like a really Scott hard sci-fi film, those characters are really fucking stupid. Like they make choices that's like, why is this incredibly intelligent botanist saying like, oh wow, an alien snake, let me pet it so we can break my arm and kill me.
Why wouldn't you pet it?
Because it looks like a giant vagina snake. I ain't petting that.
That makes me want to pet it, Steve.
Touche.
So one that I would like to bring up, and it was like a sneak Lego sequel, is the new Candyman. Talk about like honoring the original and that's also elevating it. Like they took the original and made it this like socially relevant in a way that it didn't feel ham-fisted. Like it felt natural in a way. It felt like it almost honored the original more by making it more socially relevant.
Yeah, well, it took the social relevance that the first one had in its time of the 90s and made it a similar story, still focusing on the same aspects, but tailored it more towards, you know, 2020.
They Scream 5'd it.
Yes.
And I really liked Candyman.
I like how you said yes, as if I had seen Scream 5.
But you understood. You got it where I was going, because I had explained that.
You did.
I'm going to say another hot take, because I know Steve's going to hate this one.
Okay.
This is not a good movie.
Okay.
It's not a great movie. It's not even a good movie, but it is a movie that I really, really like, just because of where I was at in life at the time. My son loved it. It was Jurassic Park for him, right? Jurassic World.
Jurassic World's good.
You like it?
I like Jurassic it. Jurassic World is the definition of complete dumb fun.
A lot of hardcore movie folk really hate Jurassic World.
I don't like the second Jurassic World at all.
No, that is trash. That is Dominion hot.
Dominion is hot garbage. But Jurassic World is just really dumb fun. I think
it's a fun fucking movie. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. I was scared to say that in this company, and no. I'm glad you guys supported me on that. Thank you.
100%.
Question. I mean, is it Jurassic Park? No. But is it a lot of fun? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I think it's the second best Jurassic Park movie.
Ooh. That is fair. I don't know. See? I do like Lost World, though. I do like Lost World.
Here's a question. How many do there have to be before they just call it Jurassic Park again?
At least one more.
Because Scream 5 is just Scream. So I feel like they set the bar.
Yeah, they've been calling it Scream 2.0 to be able to like differentiate it. But also sometimes the E is a 5.
Doesn't do it for me. Because that just means it's called Scream, parentheses, stylized as, you know what I mean? And that's so question. The Suicide Squad, is that a Lego sequel?
Ooh, that is good. Because
it's a sequel.
Yeah, but also characters. A reboot.
But it's only like 4 years later. It's just, if you want to call it a sequel, it's just a sequel.
But so in the way that we're talking about Lego sequel, it is a legacy. It is a later sequel, an unplanned sequel that carries on the story, but also reboots it.
So here's the thing. Here's my...
Does time have to be a factor here? Yes,
because the word legacy is the time factor, right? So to be a Lego sequel, there has to be a legacy. The film has to have some sort of legacy to reckon with.
That's true.
So
Suicide Squad does not have a legacy. The original one.
I mean, it does have a legacy. It's not a good one.
But I think the Suicide Squad is a reboot, right?
Rebuquel, but not a Lego sequel.
Correct.
Okay.
I don't think they're the same thing.
Oh, I didn't know we were differentiating.
Yeah, I'm hearing now differentiating.
I just want to say,
stop recording. We're starting over.
I just want to say, guys, I really enjoy living in these weeds.
Right?
Okay, so we got the Lego sequel. We got the
rebuquel. Then we got your classic reboot, and then you have the classic sequel.
Okay.
And you have your classic prequel.
Okay. What about the American remake prequel? The Amerequel.
Oh, no, that's just a, you're talking about the Ameriboot?
The Ameriboot?
Like how they're doing Train to Busan,
but
English version.
Isn't that supposed to be the prequel?
And they did like Old Boy. No, I think they're just redoing it. At least I thought. Like how they did Old Boy was just the American version.
I'm so lost.
So there's a phenomenal.
The Ameriquel.
I've completely lost the thread.
Have you ever seen Train to Busan?
No.
So fucking
good. Oh my God.
One of the best movies ever made.
Yeah.
My opinion. Who am I? Also, Old Boy, one of the best movies ever made, is a it's a Korean.
The one with Josh Brolin?
No. But that is the Ameriboot.
Yeah. Like a grudge.
A boot. So I got
That's
some
Canadian.
I got some trash ones. You guys want to hear some trash ones?
Yes, sure.
Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Is that a reboot or is that just a sequel?
I mean, I think there was long enough for it to reckon with the legacy. They were like bringing back a new.
They wanted it.
They
to
had
be
a new character. Yeah, they wanted like Shia LaBeouf to take the mantle, but we're gonna have some Harrison here to hold your
that
hand.
That was a failed reboot.
Yeah,
we're gonna have another one here soon. So
yeah, hopefully not another failure. I consider this might be a hot take. I consider Ghostbusters Afterlife to be a trash legacy sequel.
Haven't seen it. Don't know.
I still like that movie.
Hey man,
ooh, Evil Dead.
Evil Dead.
I don't know. See, that's where I was like, that's just a reboot, right?
No, because there's proof that it's a sequel, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Oh, really? Yes. Nux me, bro. Then that's the 3-star asterisk right up there with Dr. Sleep and Mad Max for me and Blade Runner.
That's just takes fucking place later well on.
Do you want to deep go into more why that is, Andy?
No.
No? Okay.
I don't recall.
But I haven't seen it in so long.
In my research, I did come across someone who wrote about why it actually is a legacy sequel and not just a
reboot. Well, the Necronomicon's the same for sure.
But it's not like a reboot, like the previous encounter with the Necronomicon
exists. Was a thing that existed, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Interesting.
I don't recall why.
I vowed to myself to watch Evil Dead this week again. Steve, throw them at me, baby.
I've got a couple that I think are movies that I'm not going to sit up here and say, like, these are Blade Runner 2049, but I think they're more a la Jurassic World, where they're just dumb, fun, really well made. They honor the legacy of like the Dark franchises. Fate. Sure. I haven't seen Dark Fate. Sure. But they're of that vein, right?
Right.
First off, I'm going to say Tron Legacy.
That's why I said
it's
I had
literally
a bunch of trash
called
ones.
Legacy.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I actually really, really like Tron Legacy. It's a movie
I need to rewatch it. I think
it's a movie without its problems,
beautiful.
But it's one of the most stylistic movies I've ever seen. The soundtrack is baller. And
Daft Punk, right?
Daft Punk, hell yeah. And I really wish they would, I really wanted them to continue that world because I thought what they were doing with it was phenomenal. X-Men First Class.
Oh, are we throwing that in?
I wondered about that one. I wasn't sure, but I guess it is because
that was the one I hinted to you about, like maybe when it first came out. No, but because of subsequent films, such as what was the one that came out after where they tied the two.
I think Days of Future Past is one of the best X-Men films.
I hard agree. Hard agree. But X-Men First Class, I think, is also one of the best X-Men films.
I love it. I'm with you, baby.
It features one of the best character deaths in an X-Men movie of all time. It involves a Quarter and Kevin Bacon.
Yes.
and then lastly, this is the big one. I love this movie. You guys are probably going to roll your eyes when I say it, but I love this
Live
movie.
Live Free or Die Hard.
You goddamn right. How weird would that have been, though?
No, that
would
have been weird.
No, this is a movie that came out in 2009, just directed by J.J. Abrams, named Star Trek.
Yes, dude. I'm sorry. I forgot about it, but I was 100% thinking about that too. That is a perfect legacy sequel.
Yes. I'm not rolling our eyes.
Because I've been watching so much Star Trek recently.
I love the JJ Star Treks. I do.
So I love his first Star Trek. The second one's okay.
It's okay.
I actually don't like Beyond.
No, I do not.
I think
either.
I'm one of the, because Beyond has this like really rabid cult following behind it.
I hated
it's
Beyond when
my least favorite.
Pretty sure Andy and I both hated Beyond.
Yeah, we saw it in theaters boring. And we're like, why the fuck did we just see what?
Yeah,
it's remember he had that weird opening where Simon Pegg was like, hey, I got to write a movie. And then the movie started. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
It was super weird.
But 2009 Star Trek is amazing because, so at the time, let me paint you a picture, right? Uh-huh.
Picture painting.
2009 Steve May was very much still in that time of his life where he's like, I want Star Wars. I don't watch Star Trek. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Beatles versus Stones, baby.
Exactly. It was just this dumb cultural war that existed amongst nerds for some reason, even though, like, at that point, we had not yet looked across the battlefield and realized we were just the same people. But when I watched Star Trek, I remember my girlfriend at the time, we watched Star Trek, and I fucking loved it. I thought all the characters were great. I really loved what J.J. A lot of people make fun of it, but, like, the lens flares. But, like, the way he shoots that movie is really unique. There's a lot of, like, tilt shift shots, yeah. And they were going through corridors with it, and they made these characters that I really had, I knew who they were, because at that point, who doesn't know who Captain Kirk is? Who doesn't know who Spock is? But they did expert casting. They have these great actors in these seminal roles with a new director, with a new vision. They made Star Trek cool. They made it more Star Wars.
Right.
You know, which, you know, maybe some Star Trek fans hate about it. But for me, it was like, yes, there's literally an R2-D2 in 2009 Star Trek.
Yeah.
And I remember, like, we saw it. I think within the week I went and saw it again. And my girlfriend at the time was like, are you a Trekkie now? Hmm. And at the time I was like, fuck you, bitch. Yeah. Don't you dare say
Don't
that.
Don't you say that word.
Also, I feel bad for saying that
word. Yeah. also, I'm really sorry.
Sorry about that. I didn't mean it.
That's, you started the name calling.
Yeah. This is your fault, not mine. Gaslight.
oh, you bitch.
But like, she's right. Fast forward to however many years now, I'm literally watching The Next Generation, and it all started because of this movie. It brought what was great about the original movies, made it more modern, and it enticed me into the world.
It made Star Trek great again.
It's going to be great.
And it brought us Beastie Boys Sabotage as a trailer, as a meme.
Sabotage. Sorry.
Can't stand it. I'm going
to planned it. That's such a good song. And that was a phenomenal cinematic moment, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. I don't really have any other good ones. It could be argued Matrix Resurrections.
Nope.
Is great.
Nope.
Some epic failures include Independence Day Resurgence.
Oh, fuck yeah. That movie was real bad.
In my opinion, almost any of the attempts to Halloween.
The newest Halloween was okay.
No, I don't like it.
The sequel to the Legacy?
No, not Halloween. Not
Halloween Kills.
The Halloween was okay.
I think it's poo-poo. I think it's poo-poo.
Ooh. Ooh.
T2 Trainspotting was good. It's just a movie I forget exists frequently. Do you remember that, Andy?
Oh, yeah.
I haven't seen Terminator 2.
That was based on porno, though, so it's weird. They called it T2 Trainspotting, but it was based on a different Irvin Welsh book. So that's muddied waters.
Waters. Are you sure?
Yeah, positive.
Doesn't porno also exist in movie form?
I don't know.
I think you might be right. Maybe I'm thinking of Filth.
Filth is a thing.
The James McAvoy, Irvin Welsh. Anyway, you mentioned Tron Legacy. I already mocked Ghostbusters Afterlife. I think that's my list. That's my list, boys.
That's my list. Okay. I wax poetic about nerd shit.
Andy, you got any more Lego sequels you want to bring up, baby girl?
Just Jane Silent Bob reboot, but they call it reboot literally in the title. But it is not. It is a Lego sequel because it just picks up where the story left off.
And in the Kevin Smithiest way, I think it succeeds.
Yeah, which is to say, he made it.
We love you, Kevin. You are inside us. Thank you.
Snowballing.
That brings us to a close of our Lego sequel episode. Thank you so much for attending. My name is Chris.
I'm Andy.
And I'm Steve.
And this has been
Streaming Things.
Happy streaming.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.